Hey, everybody, this is Greg Laurie, and you're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Dr. James Dobson, and you're tuned in to Family Talk, which is a listener-supported ministry. I am grateful, as usual, that you've joined us today. In a moment, you're going to hear from a frequent guest on this program because I have such high regard and respect for him. His name is Pastor Greg Laurie. He is a genuine man of God. Shirley and I have been close friends and partners with Greg and his wife, Kathy, for many years. He's the senior pastor of Harvest Christian Fellowship and serves as an evangelist for their Harvest Crusades. And that's relevant now because they just wrapped up their 30th annual Harvest SoCal event at Anaheim Stadium. Over 100,000 people attended, with more than 8,600 people deciding to follow Jesus. Praise God for Greg Laurie and his passion for reaching the lost in our world. In addition to his evangelistic calling, Greg is a gifted author and writer, and that's what I want to talk to you about today because we're going to hear from him about that. A few weeks ago, my colleague, Dr. Tim Clinton, sat down with Pastor Greg to discuss his newest biography. You may remember last year that we highlighted Greg's book on the life and faith of Hollywood icon Steve McQueen. His newest work follows the tumultuous life and career of music legend Johnny Cash. Many know the influence of his music but aren't aware of his faith journey. This is a fascinating interview that I know you will enjoy. Here now is Dr. Tim Clinton's interview with Pastor Greg Laurie on this edition of Family Talk.
Greg, thanks for joining us. You just came out of, your 30th anniversary of your Harvest Crusade. Tell us about what happened.
Well, it was just, it's amazing to see people coming for 30 years in a row. And I've been told, Tim, that this harvest event we do called SoCal Harvest is the longest running large scale evangelistic event in American history. There may be something like it somewhere else, but I've not heard of it, especially on the size that it is in a stadium like it is. And, you know, we've had over 6 million people in combined attendance over the years. But the most amazing thing is we've seen over 500,000 people come down on that field and make a profession of faith to follow Christ. And, you know, people have asked me, did you expect this to happen when you started this 30 years ago? Absolutely not. We were just thinking about the next year. We didn't know that it would go on for 3 decades. And so we're the most amazed people of all. But, you know, we've tried to adapt to cultural changes, technological changes, musical changes, et cetera, with the passing of time. But we've kept that essential message that we're bringing, obviously, the same, because it's the gospel, which, as Paul said, is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes. So we just thank God for what he's done.
Pretty rich tradition in American culture, isn't it? Yeah, doing these kind of crusades. You go way back to, who was it, Whitfield and Moody and others, right, Greg?
That's right, Tim. George Whitfield actually was British, but he came and had a great impact on the colonies, soon to become the United States of America. In fact, Eric McCaxis wrote a wonderful book, If You Can Keep It, and he made a case for the fact that if it were not for the preaching of George Whitefield and the spiritual revival that followed, there maybe would not even be an America, because the seeds of liberty were sown in that soil of revival. So the moral absolutes were there, the virtue was there, because people had their lives transformed by Jesus Christ. So following Whitfield would be preachers like Jonathan Edwards, Charles Finney. Later on, we would have Billy Sunday and, of course, D.L. Moody. I got the order wrong. It would have been D.L. Moody, then Billy Sunday, and ultimately Billy Graham, who, in my opinion, was the greatest of all the evangelists.
Greg, what do you see in American culture right now? Do you see a stirring? Is there a spiritual yearning or hungering going on?
Yeah, I do see it. I think especially among younger people. You know, the millennials have been described as the loneliest generation. with the highest use of pharmaceuticals, specifically antidepressants, the most depressed generation, the highest suicide rate of any generation. And now the generation following the millennials, Generation Z, they've been described by experts as the hopeless generation. So we've gone from the greatest generation of those who came through World War II to the hopeless generation. So I think they're finding the emptiness of life. I think a lot of this is the breakdown of the family too, Tim. You know, the breakdown of the family is pretty much at the heart of almost every social ill in America today. Yep. And not just the breakdown of the family, but specifically the absence of fathers. It impacts everything. And I think so many young people today, many of them not coming from intact families anymore, are wondering what absolute truth is, what the meaning of life is. They're not finding it in all the tech and all the things they have that earlier generations did not have. So they are searching, and I'm hoping the next revival that comes to America might come through one of these young generations.
We got to pray that God does that.
Yes.
Along with all those activities you're doing, you're a writer, and you're launching, well, you've got a pretty big crusade going on right now with the launch of a book called Johnny Cash, The Redemption of an American Icon. Mm-hmm. Greg, tell us about how this came to be. I mean, you're writing, I guess, a trilogy. Are you?
I am writing a trilogy.
You started out with Steve McQueen.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, and one more to come. Guess who it's on? Billy Graham.
Ah.
Yeah, because Billy Graham is the glue between McQueen and Cash. People would not know that. But Steve McQueen was the biggest movie star in the 70s, and he was like hedonist extraordinaire, chasing after everything this culture says you should chase after to be happy. And he was disillusioned, left Hollywood, moved to Ventura, California, and ultimately heard the gospel and came to Christ toward the end of his life. Tragically, after knowing the Lord for around a year, Steve found out he had cancer. He went and received proper medical treatment. It wasn't successful. So he went down to Mexico to have some kind of a surgery. And he asked to see Billy Graham. And Billy came to meet with him and prayed with Steve before he flew to Juarez, Mexico for a surgery. Steve had misplaced his Bible, and Billy said, "Here, take mine." And I've held this Bible Billy gave to Steve McQueen in my hands as Steve's widow, Barbara McQueen, let me use it to preach from in one of our crusades. And you have the notes of Billy in the margins. But Steve went down. The surgery was successful, but tragically, he died shortly after. And they went into the room where he was and pulled the sheet back, and he was holding that Bible of Billy Graham. Now fast forward to Johnny Cash. Very different story, different narrative. Also very well-known, iconic figure, had worldwide fame. But Johnny was raised in a Christian home, you know, but he rebelled and he went out and did things he was ashamed of and struggled, but ultimately returned to his faith. So Steve is sort of your classic non-believer coming to Christ. Johnny is more like the prodigal son who fell and returned home again. But Johnny was very close friends with Billy Graham, sang at many of Billy's crusades. They actually would vacation together. Their wives, Ruth and June, were very close as well. So I thought, I want to write this third one on Billy Graham. And I had the privilege of getting to know Billy quite well. I've been on his board of directors for 25 years. And I spent a lot of time with him toward the end of his ministry, the last 10 years. He had me help him with research for his sermons. And so I interacted with him a lot. So I want to bring a more human side of this great man of God. But Johnny, you know, his story is, it's a classic American story. You know, he was literally raised picking cotton in Arkansas. He was dirt poor. His mother, Carrie Cash, was a very strong Christian. His father, Ray, professed faith, but was a very harsh, austere father. There was a big event in Johnny's young life that impacted him throughout the rest of his life. Johnny had an older brother named Jack. They were inseparable. They were best friends. They'd go fishing together, do everything together. And Jack, though he was very young, was an aspiring preacher and carried his Bible everywhere and sort of kept young Johnny on the straight and narrow. So one day they were supposed to go fishing, but instead Jack took some extra work at this sawmill to help the family out. And in a tragic accident, he was pulled into a saw that tore him open, and he was holding onto his vital organs, and he died a few days later. So Johnny was devastated by this. And then Johnny's father, Ray Cash, said to him, God took the wrong son.
Yeah, I read that, Greg. It was stunning. You know, when you look at the narrative of someone, you go back and it shapes and it forms who we are. Mm-hmm. As I read about Johnny and this story of redemption, I was moved deeply by how he was influenced by all these experiences in his family early on as a boy.
Yeah.
Can't even imagine what it would be like to lose your kid brother, who you loved, who you looked up to. Who, by the way, stood tall, who challenged you.
Yeah, that's right.
He did challenge Johnny.
Yeah, he held Johnny's feet to the fire, and he was a great example for Johnny. And so when his brother died, he sort of lost a little bit of his moral compass. And then, you know, as he got older, he discovered this ability to sing, and he was out of the house pretty fast. In fact, before Johnny was the Man in Black, he was the Man in Blue.
He served reading about that. Yeah. He served in the Air Force,
That's correct. Yep. And then that's where he really started developing with his guitar and singing. And then ultimately he ends up at Sun Records with Sam Phillips. And that's where Elvis got his start and Jerry Lee Lewis and Carl Perkins. And so Johnny came in and Sam liked what he saw, but Johnny actually came in with gospel songs. One of the songs he wanted to record was "Were You There When They Crucified My Lord?" Johnny thought he'd be a gospel singer, but Sam Phillips said, "No, I see you in another way." And the hits came after that, and Johnny's career exploded, and ultimately culminating in the 70s with his TV show. But the thing about Cash is at the peak of his popularity, he used his platform for the gospel. A lot of times in country music, you know, the artists may have their success, and then when it begins to fade, here comes the gospel album. Johnny wanted from the get-go to do gospel albums and gospel songs, and he did even when he was singing Cocaine Blues, A Boy Named Sue, and Folsom Prison Blues. He's also singing Were You There When They Crucified My Lord and other well-known Christian songs.
What drove that, though, Greg? Keep going back. So you got a dad who said, hey, God took the wrong son.
Yeah.
His daddy was pretty rough on him.
Yeah.
As I read the story, you know that. But he always wanted to please his dad.
Yeah, he did.
But he had a mother who loved Christ, who, by the way, said, listen, you've got a gift. When you think of Christianity, you don't really think, you don't put Johnny Cash in the high list up there of guys who emulate, you know, this walk of faith.
Yeah.
But looking at this piece of work you put together, which is really a spiritual biography, right?
It is. That's exactly how I would describe it.
Yeah. In there, you see these remnants of prayers of a mother, this tormented, tortured soul. How did Johnny explode on the scene and become so popular, Greg? What was it about him? Did he represent middle America? Did he represent the broken, the poor, the whatever? Why were people so drawn to him? Yeah. Is it because of our own brokenness and we realize who we are? And it's like they watched him journey and struggle, or what do you think it was? Of course he was great. I mean, he was the king of country music.
Right. I think everything you said is true. I think there was something unique about Cash. There was an authenticity in his voice. He was described as the voice of America. Chris Christopherson described Johnny as Abraham Lincoln with a wild side. So, you know, on one hand, he's this like incredible American figure. But on the other side, he could do crazy things. And I write about a lot of his antics in the book, his pranks on the road, his the trouble he got into, his the cars he destroyed, the things he did that a lot of times were fueled by amphetamines. You know, Tim, he got into drug use at an early age to keep him, you know, energetic on the road. So this amphetamine issue became a real addiction, and it was a reoccurring problem for him. Alcohol also came into the picture and other problems. But I guess what separated Johnny and why he's not in the pantheon of rock stars who left us too soon by either suicide or drug overdoses is when he would hit rock bottom, he would call out to God. He knew. Johnny knew what was true. And he turned to the Lord over and over again. And so I think that his brokenness, his willingness to admit his faults was known to many. And that almost made him a more appealing character. He wasn't perfect. Far from it. You know, sinners thought he was a saint. Saints thought he was a sinner. In reality, well, he was both. Johnny once said, Johnny's the nice one. Cash gives me all the trouble they fight. And that sort of sums up that struggle that he had in life. And he knew he had this struggle. So this is sort of the strange juxtapositioning of Cash. At the peak of his success, he's singing about Jesus. So it's not like he came to this later, but then he would fall and fall big, but he would return to the Lord. But then, Tim, in the end of his life, he had a huge career resurgence.
Yeah, what, in the 90s, he made a massive comeback.
Massive. And this is unique, too, because a lot of people musically, they have their career, they have their start, they hit a certain level, they spend the rest of their life hopefully singing their hits and filling venues. So Johnny at one point was in stadiums, then he was in arenas, and then he was basically in supper clubs singing to maybe 250 people. And so he was very discouraged by the course his career had taken. But there's this producer named Rick Rubin, who had produced a lot of rock acts like Run DMC and others, who thought Johnny was super cool. And he thought, man, I want to reintroduce Johnny to a younger audience. So at the same time that he was having a musical resurgence, Johnny was having a spiritual resurgence. And he got stronger and deeper in his faith. He was finally drug-free, alcohol-free, walking with the Lord, but his health was failing him because all those chickens came home to roost of the abuse of life he had lived, and it took its toll on his body. But though his body was failing, his spirit and his spiritual life was stronger than ever.
You're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton. In studio today, Greg Laurie, pastor, evangelist, talking about brand new explosive book out there, Johnny Cash, The Redemption of an American Icon. Fascinating read. I couldn't put it down, Greg.
Oh, great.
I loved it. Seriously. Well written. Marshall Terrell, I guess, co-author with you.
Yes.
Great guy. But the tone here, it's a spiritual story.
Yeah.
The journey, the highs, the lows, the real life of Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
Greg, inside these words are written, contrary to what a lot of people think, being a Christian doesn't make a bad person good. They're forgiven people. I guess that sums up a lot of Johnny Cash. That moral compass, that coming back to when he hit rock bottom. Greg, there was a story in there about Johnny Cash and a cave that I found like bizarre for a moment. Can you unpack that? I want people to hear this. I want people who are out there who are struggling.
Yeah.
Maybe they have a loved one.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of someone I know right now. My prayer is that God would minister to him, seriously, and draw him.
Well, Johnny was very down. He would have very low lows. He'd have very high highs. Drugs didn't help. It was like throwing fuel on the fire. It only made the problem worse. And in desperation, there's a series of caves that he went into, and people had gone into these same caves and died. And Johnny went as far as he could possibly get. He really didn't want to live anymore. And he thought he would die. But then I think when he realized that there was no way out, there was something that happened internally, and he just broke and called out to God. He ultimately found his way out of that cave, but it's sort of a metaphor for his life. You know, a lot of times we get ourselves into trouble that we create ourselves. And then we say, God, why did you let this happen to me? Well, a lot of times we really have ourselves to blame. And you know, you can't help a person who doesn't want to be helped. You can't help a person get off drugs if they don't want to get off drugs. You can't help a person stop drinking if they don't want to stop drinking. It's like when Jesus saw that man who was sitting by the water waiting for the angel to stir it. He said, do you want to be made whole? What kind of question is that to ask somebody who obviously has a severe disability? Well, it's a very good question, because not every drunk person wants to leave that life. Not every homeless person wants to get off the streets. So really the question is, do you want to change? And in his heart of hearts, Johnny did want to change. Yeah. And that's why he turned to the Lord. You know, we've heard recently about some notable people that were known in the Christian world who said, I'm not a Christian anymore. And some people scratch their head and wonder what that all is all about. First of all, I would say they might just be having a struggle with their faith, and hopefully they'll return to their faith. One person said, well, you know, my faith has been tested. Well, look, the faith that has not been tested is a faith that cannot be trusted. So if you have real faith, it will be tested and it will stand the test of time. Through all of his highs and lows and even tragedies in his life, some brought on by himself, some that just came his way, Johnny never doubted God. I think when a person says they are walking away from their faith, if they're a real believer, they'll come back again. If they don't come back again, I suggest to you, they were never a believer to start with. Because it says in 1 John, they went out from us and they did not return to us, because if they'd really been of us, they would have never left us. That's a paraphrase. But that's really what the essence of what he's saying. So here's what I would say to a listener right now, Tim, is you know, maybe you've messed up. Maybe you've hit rock bottom. Maybe you're in a cave, in a way, metaphorically speaking, like Johnny was, and you don't know how to get out. You call out to God, and you need to want his help, and you need to take his help. But then, obviously, you need to take practical steps to break free from maybe the addiction you have. Johnny ultimately went to rehab. He had to.
Yeah, he went Betty Ford, didn't he?
He sure did. Yeah, you know, some people need to go there to a rehab center of some kind. Others maybe won't need that, but you need to make yourself accountable. You need to get help. And in Johnny's case, when he was in the throes of addiction, June Carter Cash had to step in and remove bad influences from him, because there were people that kept dragging him down again and again. So there's a spiritual side to this, but there's a practical side too, don't you think?
Yeah, Greg, and what I think I hear you saying is if you have discontent inside your heart, if there's something that says it's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Os Guinness once said he had more respect for the guy who wanted to put his fist through the wall. At least he knew things weren't the way they were supposed to be. Could it be the Spirit of God just trying to say, come on, come home.
Yes.
Make a turn.
That's right.
Stop.
Yes.
That, I think, is what this redemptive theme is all about in Johnny Cash, isn't it?
100%. You got the message of the book. You know, it's been said, and I mentioned this in the book, when you get to the end of yourself, you get to the beginning of God. Mm. And sometimes we have to hit rock bottom. So the only way to look is up. And that happened to Johnny. Actually, with Johnny, it happened time and time again. In contrast with McQueen, he came to that conclusion and made a commitment that pretty much sustained him for the rest of his tragically short life. But Johnny struggled again and again. But this is the thing. Call out to the Lord. You know, if you're out caught in a riptide in the ocean and you're in trouble and you see a lifeguard, you need to say, help. And you need to be saved. You know, years ago, I was out in the ocean with my son, Jonathan, who was very young. I was sort of holding him up above the water, and we got caught in this very strong riptide, and I couldn't get my feet on the sand. And I was very frustrated because I'm keeping him above water, but I can't stabilize myself. Wow. And I was only a few feet from shore, but yet I realized I needed help. And a lifeguard saw me and started swimming out to save me. And at the last moment, I got my feet on the ground. I said, thank you, I'm okay. But the thing is, I was too proud to call for help. But in reality, I needed help. And this lady, actually, who was the lifeguard, saw that and came to my rescue even before I called out. And that can be like us a lot of times in life. It's like we're too proud to say we need help. Don't be too proud. The Bible says, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Call out to him. He will rescue you. He'll take you out of that pit. He'll take you out of that hole. He'll take you out of that cave and change your life. But you must call out to him.
The life of Johnny Cash. What's the closing word? What's the real take home? Tim, if you remember anything from this book, from this interview, it's this.
I would say, if you remember anything from this book and interview, remember this. Johnny messed up many, many times, but he always knew where to go. And no matter what you've done, no matter what mistakes you've made, no matter what sins you've committed or failures you've had, you serve a God of second chances and third chances and fourth chances, and it's never too late to come back to him again. And I think sometimes people think, well, I'm too far gone. I'm not good enough to get to heaven. Listen, man, you were never good enough to get to heaven, and you never will be. Heaven isn't for good people. It's for forgiven people. That's why I called this book, Johnny Cash, The Redemption of an American Icon. My book about McQueen was Steve McQueen, The Salvation of an American Icon. This is a story of a man who was redeemed again and again. Listen, God doesn't just save us. He's saving us, and he will yet save us. Salvation is past, present, and future. So no matter what you've done, it's not too late for you to turn back to the Lord.
Greg, thanks for joining us, for taking time out of your busy schedule, praying that God continues to lead and bless the ministry you have, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, Tim, thank you very much, and please give my regards to our mutual friend, James Dobson.
This is Roger Marsh, and you are listening to Family Talk, a division of the James Dobson Family Institute. You've been listening to Dr. Tim Clinton's recent conversation with Pastor Greg Laurie. Visit our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org to learn more about Pastor Laurie's church and also the Harvest SoCal Crusades. There we will also have a link for Pastor Laurie's new book on the life of Johnny Cash. You'll find all that information at drjamesdobson.org and then go to the broadcast page. Well, we've come to the end of this week of programs here on Family Talk. Join us again Monday for the first part of Dr. Dobson's latest interview with Rabbi Jonathan Kahn. They'll explore Rabbi Kahn's new prophetic work called The Oracle, The Jubilean Mysteries Unveiled. It's bound to be a lively conversation, so tune in again Monday for another edition of Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Have a great weekend.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hi, this is Roger Marsh for the James Dobson Family Institute, a ministry that is completely supported by listeners just like you. Learn how you can stand with us financially in our fight for righteousness in the culture by going to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or call toll-free 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for your prayers and your continued financial support of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.